Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
The Blue Collar BS podcast helps blue collar business owners like you build a business that'll thrive for decades to come by turning that blue collar bullshit into some blue collar business solutions.
In this episode, you're going to learn that profit is for the mission. Value of the business is more than the property you own. Space is a tool, not overhead. Everyone should listen to that section. And business is all about people.
Our guest today is Tom McCrossin, who is taking outdated industrial properties and turning them into assets for growing and thriving blue collar businesses. We hope you enjoy the show. Welcome back to Blue Collar BS, Brad. How are you doing today, my friend?
I am doing very wonderful, sir. Very, very wonderful in this great mid-December day where it's 40 degrees and cloudy, but no snow, no rain. Probably not going to have a white Christmas this year, but that's okay.
Oh, you're just, you know, raining on so many people's parades. Who cares?
Yeah, I know. This episode is going to air in April or May. No one's going to give a shit at that.
Right. It's going to be snowing then. So
right.
It could. Just remember at Christmas when you wanted all your snow, now you got it.
Right. As I'm trying to get on the golf course and it's going to be snowing in the middle of April. Perfect.
Great. It'll be awesome. It'll be fantastic. So great weather, great temperatures out right now. So I'm assuming we have a great guest today, Brad. Who do we got?
Well, let's see. We'll find out. That's for calling me old earlier, Tom. Just so you know.
Wow.
I think you gotta listen to an old joke, Brad, before you
Our guest today. Our guest today is Tom McCrossin. He is a very unique individual in my network that I've got to come to know. He buys industrial properties. And when I met him the first time, we started talking about, like, wow, that's pretty cool. There's nobody else I know that does those things. He's not looking for the sexy, fancy, high-end stuff. He's looking for the dark, dirty, dangerous shit that people need to go and make things and build things and create things with and support industry out there that most don't want to even touch. So, Tom, welcome to the show today to talk about industrial properties, property management, and all the fun things that you do to support the blue-collar world.
I love what I do, Brad. Four years ago, I was working in contracting, being an estimator, and someone invited me into an opportunity to buy a warehouse with them, and the rest, as they say, is history. The awesome. Uglier, the better is what I tell people. If it needs a roof, I'll put it on. If it needs a parking lot, let's tear it out and figure out what do we need to do to have it better drain. You know, my business is real estate, and to do that, we need tenants, we need space, and combined, we have a fantastic partnership.
Awesome. So before we get going on asking you some pretty cool questions we already got lined up, let our listeners know which generation do you fit in with, identify with, whatever it is your generation determines, you know, that you call yourselves now.
I think if you look at age and year, birth, or whatever, I fall in that millennial category, but I'm on the older spectrum.
All right.
The end of the spectrum that we like to go out and work and do activity. And personally, I like working with my hands. So I guess I would be the oddball of the millennials.
All right.
All right. There we go. Name of the show, Millennial Oddball. Perfect.
There we go. We've got it now. That's fantastic.
Nah.
That's awesome.
So you support, obviously, that industrial manufacturing space. How have you seen the differences between old guys like myself, which, right, whatever, and then the younger generation, the millennials, either the older millennials or even the younger millennials, and now soon to be the Gen Zs, how are you seeing their attitude towards property ownership versus leasing and those types of things?
I know when I talk to younger business owners, guys that, you know, were electricians, carpenters, plumbers, heating contractors, that were in the field and they decide, hey, I can go do this for my own. You know, I can go sell jobs and I can create a business, and then, you know, define business for those guys. You know, just because you work out of your garage and you make a little bit more money than you did as an employee, but now you have all the challenges as being a business owner. You have the administrative tasks, you have the billing, you have the collections and yada, yada. Those guys, I believe that they understand that they can make more money reinvesting into their business than they can by putting a down payment on a building. Mm. And the reason I say that is because they would rather go out and hire additional service technicians or plumbers or electricians or whatever their, you know, skill set is, and have additional work so that they're calculating with the help of guys like Brad to understand, what does it cost them to operate? What does it cost them to service a client? How much does it cost to acquire a new client? Those aren't like $5, $10 activities, right? Like nobody's working for $15 an hour when you start. Everybody wants $25, $30, $40. I don't even know what some of those guys start at, but things I hear and buddies of mine that operate those businesses, they go, everybody thinks this is easy. It's easy to go out and start a business. It's easy to go out and sell jobs. It's really easy when you have a 40-hour work day and your family and friend says, hey, Brad, I know you do electrical for your day job. Do you want to come over and work for $25 an hour? And I know I've had that question. And they go, Tom, I wouldn't show up to your house for $100 an hour. and so going back to the question, the younger guys starting business, you know, they want to create a business, they want process, they want to go out and get jobs and produce them and have profit, right? And so if they take their profit and instead of investing in another service tech and they go out and buy a building, I always say to every business owner, what is your focus? Your business or the real estate? And they say, you know what? It's the business. I said, so why do you want to own the real estate? My business is real estate. My business is not being an electrician. My business is not being a plumber. It's not manufacturing and operating a CNC machine. My business is the real estate and the management of the real estate. And so if we focus on the real estate and you focus on your business, I guarantee both of us will make more money. Mm-hmm. Because when you focus on one task, one focus, we all do better. I'm an ADD kid from 5 years old to today. I cannot focus, but warehouses, industrial, manufacturing, man, I live and breathe this stuff. And and that's what I always tell other business owners that live and breathe their trade, whether they're a carpenter or electrician. I keep repeating those because that's who I deal with.
Right.
I deal with those trades. And if you can perfect what you're doing in your trade, you don't have to worry about the fact that a roof costs $500,000. You don't have to worry about that the parking lot and the asphalt contractor that comes out is going to get you for a change order, and that change order is going to be more than what you made, you know, when you're 21 years old. I mean, those costs they're elaborately expensive. That's probably not the great way to say it, but it's expensive to own real estate.
It's true, though. It is very, very true. And I can appreciate how you phrase that question. It's, you know, are you a business owner or are you a landlord? And those are two very different things.
Mm-hmm. They're very different things. And guys that I know that have bought buildings and they had a subtenant. So let's say it's a small 10,000 square foot box. And I use box, you know, just very vaguely, four walls and a roof. You got a box. And you can divide it either with a fence or a wall, or depending on your relationship with, you know, a co-tenant in your space, you may not even be concerned that, you know, if you're storing at a tent, they want to store fitness equipment in my space. And they're like, well, if someone wants to steal a treadmill that's in the building, I'm going to know who stole it. And, and secondly, it's like 1,200 pounds. So good luck towing it out yourself.
By all means.
So So depending on the relationship with who your co-tenant is, yes, there is the concept, buy the building, have somebody else help pay the mortgage. But now in the middle of, you know, a Wednesday at 2 o'clock, you're in a customer's house, you're fixing whatever that it is that they need fixed that day, whatever you're doing. And the co-tenant goes, hey, the roof's leaking. And so now you got to stop what you're doing. You got to call the roofer. You got to go meet the roofer. We all know that in the trades, the dollar made is best use when you're focused on that task. If you're an electrician charging $125 an hour, your time is worth something. I think we can all, you know, we're home, we're, you know, I think we walk into a lot of friends' houses and they're an electrician or a plumber, and I keep using those because that just comes naturally easy to think about. Easy. Yes, right. Easy. And nobody's got a finished project at home.
Right.
I renovated my house 7 years ago. We still don't have finished steps to the basement. Because why finish that part?
Is your wife happy about that?
I'm sure if she watched this, she'd go, why did you talk about that? Because the example is the same at everybody's house that's in the trades.
1,000% accurate.
You got the electrician that has exposed copper wires that are wire nutted in the basement because you needed an extension cord. Instead of buying a real extension cord, you use the extra Romex out of the back of your truck, which maybe you never even paid for because it's your employer's Romex, right?
Yeah. Hey, we don't want to get any accusations here.
But I go back to just, you know, there's all these little things that add up, and over time you go, well, that doesn't really bother me, so I'm not going to address it. So if you take that same concept at your house and now you bought a commercial building, you're not improving the value of the real estate. Yes, you have this equity pay down through a mortgage, but it's so minuscule. You know, with interest rates being at 8% or 9%, if you go SBA, the fees that are getting charged and the way you have to acquire it, and more importantly, the amount of capital required. If you buy a $1 million building and you need to do 25% down, it's $250,000. Well, if you're already struggling for cash flow in your business, why take that kind of hit? Mm-hmm. And we also live in a now society, right? Everybody wants everything now. They want the fancy truck. They want the fancy, you know, the fancy house, and they want everything fancy.
They want their basement stairs finished. God damn it.
Yeah.
I just bought a new sport car and I can't fathom paying more than $200 for one. It doesn't matter.
So, Tom, what are some trends that you are seeing in the commercial space with the younger generation as boomers, like Brad, are looking to move on from their business?
I don't know if I've experienced a whole lot of that from my perspective. I've thought about adding some of those service businesses that help our real estate portfolio. I think there's always, you know, everybody wants to create a business and have an exit strategy, but without having those processes and procedures and having, you know, 10 people on staff, you know, you yourself and I are hard to sell, right? Because if someone came to me and said, hey, Tom, let me buy your management company, it's me, myself, and I, there's not much there, right? Like, and so when I talk to younger business owners who want, you know, let's not even talk younger. Let's talk guys that have been doing it for 30 years. They're ready to retire. That they want to get out of the scenario that they're in. They want to exit. A lot of those guys, the only thing that they've had is the concept of the real estate. And I'm talking about not buying your real estate. And these guys all own the real estate.
Correct.
Yep. But that's the only value that they have in their business is the piece of real estate the business is in. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I go back. If you focus on your task and your business that you've started and you've perfected and you have passion for, you can create a ton more value in your business than the piece of real estate. And if you do want to invest in real estate, then find other guys who can operate it and partner with them.
Right.
Because their business is the real estate.
Correct. I just had I just did a business calculation for a a firm down on the south side of Waukesha County, and we're going through it and get the number, and he looks at it and can see, I can see this very dejected look on his face of the number that we came up with. And he goes, he's like, is this include the building? I'm like, because he also owns the building underneath the other LLC. I said, nope, this is just the business. He goes, oh, good. Because I'm like, I was really, really concerned. I'm like, like, nope, the building's not part of your business. The building's part of your other entity that's not part of it. And I said, are you going to sell the building with the property or with the business? He's like, absolutely. I don't want to be a landlord for anybody else. I'm like, okay, well, there you go. Yeah. There you have it. And that's the issue. It's like, no, the old guys that have the buildings that have the businesses in them, they don't want to own the building anymore because they don't want to be the landlord because they know it's a pain in the ass.
But if you do that all the time and I handle all these tenants and I handle those service maintenance requests, then, you know, I'll be the landlord for life.
Right. Because that's your business, right? The manufacturer making widgets, that property management's not the business. It happened to be the business because it was part of his daily life. It's like living in your house. You take care of it. You do those things and make that happen. And if we're going to sell the business and try to keep the building, well, hold time out. That's a very different world and a very different lifestyle and a very different opportunity. And like most of the guys I talk to of the older generations, they when they get out, no, the building is their safety net to be able to exit the business and be able to retire effectively because they didn't do the right stuff with the business, unfortunately. But they got the building to fall back on.
Yep.
And I think, you know, I had a conversation with a guy last week. He bought a manufacturer. He's actually bought two manufacturing businesses. And he was very adamant. I want to buy the real estate. I want to own the real estate my business is in. And I said, why? Why do you want to own this piece of real estate? What, again, I go back to the question, like, what's your focus? Are you trying to spend your time? Are you working on your time to improve your manufacturing process? Or are you trying to play both sides of the coin where rather than put, if you have the extra cash, so let's say your manufacturing business does spit out, you know, 10% net, because there are some manufacturing businesses that operate very well and they've been lifelong cash flow machines, then go find a different way to invest that. Because what you can challenge yourself in is you buy this piece of real estate and now you're pigeonholed that you can't be flexible. As a business, if you are in a space, I just had this happen with a tenant. He moved in 2,500 square feet. 3 months later, he signed a giant contract and had to get more product. He had to upgrade his space from 2,500 to 7,000 square feet.
Wow.
Because of our flexibility, because we work with tenants and can move them from space to space, we can fathom to say, hey, we can let you out of this, but you're going to go rent from another one of my buildings because I'm not going to let that customer go, right?
Yeah.
Just, that's not my business. Hey,
nope.
Hey, let me commit you to this lease and you can go rent from Joe down the street because I'm that nice of a guy. Like that's not how my business works. But what it does work and how I can provide value back to you, Mr. Business Owner, we can move you into a bigger space. Or position you into a building that you grow into instead of grow out of.
Right.
And that's another concept that's happening a lot right now. As 2021, 2022 was occurring, everyone wanted more space, more space, more space. And now the economy has shifted quite drastically. And we're seeing, I haven't experienced it in our portfolio, but you're seeing and hearing in the marketplace of businesses that are either subleasing space, which means that I'm still responsible for the lease that I signed, but I have a means of bringing another tenant in to take the extra space we don't need, or their lease is expiring. And instead of staying, they're going to go find space that's smaller to reduce their overhead expense.
Right.
And I guess I say overhead expense and I challenge that because space is a tool. The warehouse, the box, the space you operate in is actually a tool to the business. And I don't believe you should look at that as overhead.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And that is one of the reasons why I think when we first met at the coffee shop 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was, and you brought that concept up, I'm like, yeah, that is something different that most aren't talking about or looking at. And that's why I really appreciate you for what you do because you're able to have that conversation with a business owner and potentially talk them out of a bad decision or have them think about it slightly differently. And that's the beauty of building up, you know, network of strong people. Cause it's like, hey, how do you think about that differently? Cause it's, you're right. It's not an expense. It's an asset. It's a tool. It's an opportunity.
It, you know, I had a tenant that they run a CNC shop.
Mm-hmm.
They run three shifts. The other day he commented to me, they run four shifts. I said, four shifts. How does that work? He goes, well, Monday through Friday is 24 hours a day and Saturday's 12 hours. Four shifts. Hmm. It's like,
wow.
That's one way to operate. But more importantly, their focus is production. And so if you're going to buy $1 million machine that only runs 40 hours a week, you're leaving the other 80 hours in a 5-day work week on a machine that has production capabilities, right?
Yep.
So if you have that $1 million that runs 24/7, 24/6, 24/5, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can generate more revenue with that one machine. You may end up having to hire someone to run, you know, maybe
correct,
maybe 40 hours a week of a dedicated person to ensure that machine is running at its peak performance. But they're looking at their machine as the tool, right? So I look at the building as the tool to run your business. And right. So when you start looking at the ROI on the space, and how do you ensure that it's not too tall, it's not too short,
mm-hmm.
it works for what your business needs.
Okay, Dr. Seuss.
you end up realizing that there's lots of different options
mm-hmm.
for your business to run in. And without the right partner, without the right advisor, you end up, again, getting stuck in a bad spot. There's lots of businesses right now that want more space. The part of the puzzle that's challenging is the cost to move.
Right.
The cost to expand, the down, you know, if you're moving your machines from one facility to another, how much is it going to cost you in lost productivity on top of the labor and the cost to move the machine? You got to bring in this heavy equipment moving company. You don't just hire two men in a truck to move your 40,000 pound press.
Right. Right. So just to go off of that, and this is a plug for hopefully I can get her on the show. I've been working on her for a while. So Stacia Hobson, she just came out with this awesome book. I've read through it, The Move to Profit. It is all about relocating a business and navigating the risk to that bottom line. She had moved her business from Illinois. She's moved her business twice, once inside Illinois and then from Illinois to Mississippi, I believe it was. And
wow.
So she has talked about, she's moved her factory twice now.
Wow.
It's a manufacturing
profitable organization. On a third time manufacturer moving.
Well, you know, that's.
Well, do you think?
Get the book, read the book, you know?
Wow.
But she moved because of taxes and just Illinois was just a bad place to be at the end of the day. So she moved to a completely different culture, completely different thing. And so that cost of move is really, really important to have that consideration. But there are ways to go about doing it. And too often, again, because they're looking at it all as an expense versus an opportunity, you take the wrong approach, you have the wrong mindset, and you end up screwing the pooch because it's a fire drill versus a planned event.
It's like this tenant of mine who rented 2,500 square feet and then had to move to 7,000. In the process of him immediately moving in, he renovated a bathroom, which he hasn't finished yet. And so he's got that cost. He's got the releasing cost that he agreed to, right? I said, hey, we can be flexible, but this cost of releasing your space is, I didn't decide to move you in and move you out.
Right.
But all of those costs add up. And so then there's the challenge of how do you take care of those surprise costs and how do you having a valued partner for your space can eliminate some of those challenges, right? Because if he was in another, he could have been subjected to, you know, a $70,000 bill for the termination of his lease if the landlord didn't have that ability to be flexed. If that partner that does the space with you as a business isn't looking, how do you, you know, our business is space, but more importantly, our business is people.
Yep.
And so every time we have to turn and find a new tenant, it's not an inexpensive endeavor. And it's kind of like finding new customers.
You just don't put the for rent sign out in the building and it just happens to go right away.
It just happens.
It just doesn't happen like that. People driving by industrial parks all the time just say, oh, there's a space for sale. It's like, you know, it's like the we're hiring sign, isn't it?
So growing up, I think we're all familiar with the sign in the window and going, why is that space still for rent? Why is there a sign in the yard? Well, sometimes there's a relationship that says, hey, Mr. Landlord, can I put a sign in the yard? I know you don't need to rent your space, but we want phone call traffic. And yep. So you'll see that. And then secondly, one of the pieces that when we're renting space or we're leasing space, it's really important that the business we're renting to is financially stable.
Yep.
Right? So
you are such a picky landlord.
So picky.
Well, let me ask you this. How many customers have you had that didn't pay your bill?
They eventually all pay.
Yep.
I find that hard to believe, Brad.
They eventually all pay. I learned a lot in those first few years. So mm-hmm. I did have some bad debt that we had to do some write-offs with because I made some very poor decisions.
I bring this up because I, too, just quickly rented space when I started my business and said, oh, you got money in the bank. You're going to pay your bill. Here's some space. 6 months later, $35,000 lost rent plus legal. I got my space back. And from there, I would rather sit on empty space than rent if the tenant isn't going to pay the bill.
Right.
Right. Oh,
I hear you.
Yeah. So, Tom, just real quick, what are three things that business owners that are currently thinking about buying, they're currently running, but they're thinking mm-hmm. about buying physical property.
Yep.
What are three quick things that you would like them to understand on if they did, it'll impact their business?
I got a good one. Bought a building.
All right.
Received the mm-hmm. tax bill. It went up 66%. The tenant's responsible for the tax bill. That increase was $44,000. So my question is, how does that impact your business if you got a surprise $44,000 bill? The next question is, if you buy a building, and again, your business isn't buying buildings, you're going to rely on some 30-party inspector who's only going to call out the cosmetic bullshit that they find. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's snow-covered roof, and you find out 6 months later it needs a new roof, and that bill is $150,000. So now you're up to almost $210,000, if I do my math right? 66 and 150, 210, mm-hmm. 215. How does that impact your life? How does that impact your business? And how are you going to pay for those things? And how do you move forward? Now,
right.
Some people would say, well, I'll just go sell more jobs. I'll go sell more business. Well, if you're a CNC shop and it's really hard to get new CNC customers, it's not an easy answer.
That's why we put the buckets up high enough with the, it's not the bucket. You get the teepee tent with the hose on it. So that way you direct the water away from the machine until we can
fit
the roof. That's what you do in that
sense. Yes.
And you're laughing because you've seen it, Tom. You've seen it and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I walked through this building. Broker called me up and said, I got a great building for you. It's a good price per square foot. It's a rainy Tuesday afternoon. We walk in and he goes, oh, and the roof needs some help. Before we walked in.
Okay.
I bet you there was more than like 27 buckets trying to catch water in the building. And I said to him, I said, did you expect all of this? No, they told me they fixed some stuff. And I said, and you want me to buy it with the concept? All right, again, earlier in the show, I said, I buy the uglier, the better.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to make sense of what you're doing in business. It's got to make sense, dollars. It's got to make logic. You can't pay a high cost of material thinking you're just going to go and turn around and charge it back to the tenant. And if you do run into that experience where you just keep getting the bill, I talked to lots of smaller tenants. And when you ask them about this concept called a triple net lease, which can be a benefit to the tenant and a benefit to the landlord, because depending on what the condition of the building is, and if you have a full-time maintenance guy in your shop, there are cost savings by having a triple net lease. But a lot of times what I've experienced is that landlords think that this is an endless bill back to the tenant. There is no thought or care what it costs or how it gets done. This isn't my problem. The lease says the tenant. When I call my tenant up and I said, hey,
the tenant's responsible for maintenance. Can you define what maintenance is? Anything I don't want to pay is what maintenance is for many landlords. Bullshit.
I can't disagree with that, Brad. And, you know, our vision, our value is to ensure that, yes, there is the expectation that the tenant pays for those items of repair. But the other thing to think about is if you damage it, you should pay for it.
Correct.
Yeah, there's a lot of liability language in leases or whatnot. If your semi trucks are driving over the parking lot and you have 50 trucks a day, that parking lot's going to last a lot less than if I have a business that gets one semi truck a week.
Right.
So that wear and tear, that's maintenance. Now, you can exclude the replacement of the parking lot. I would challenge to say, hey, I'm not the one that had 50 trucks a day. We can figure out a way to make
sense. But you're the one who said yes to me, so it's your fault.
Yeah.
You're the one who decided to say yes.
Right.
You are correct, Brad. You are correct. So let's just recap and say triple net leases, if you understand what your risks are, they can be positive. If you don't understand it, they are the detriment to a small business.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And to offset that, to go to a modified gross lease and get on the same page with the landlord, you may pay a little bit more in rent, but what you're capping is your exposure of expense.
Yep.
On a modified gross rent, you know, consistently, like you go rent an apartment, your rent's $1,500 a month for a 3-bedroom. And then a modified gross rent, you know, okay, so every tenant, whether you're renting an apartment or you're renting a business, you should pay for electric and gas. If you find a building that's included in rent, congratulations.
God, right,
you're never going to have anything improved upon.
Right.
But you are, because it's just not being operated to improve the space.
Right. Yep.
Now, if you are paying for gas and electric, that there are ways to reduce the cost. There are things you can do. But everybody that rents an apartment, buys a house, you pay an electric gas bill. That should be standard.
Right.
You shouldn't sometimes take the risk that the tax bill won't go up or that the roof repairs are, the roof's 40 years old. And so the landlord continues to charge back $5,000 or $20,000 a year in roof maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
That roof has lived its life. And so those are ways to ensure you're working with the right partner, because again, space is a tool. This is not just like, I get lots of calls of, I'm in my garage. I got cash today. I can rent tomorrow. There's plenty of other Craigslist ads that'll go rent to you.
Right.
But if you want legitimate professional space, you have to be a legitimate professional business.
Mm-hmm. So as our listeners are predominantly Midwest focused, as we go through here, how as they're listening to this show, we've got who knows who's going to listen and show up. And you mentioned before the show, you're looking to, kind of be in that 8-hour radius of Wisconsin. How are people going to get a hold of you, Tom? How are people going to find you and your business? Because you are speaking very logically, pragmatically, and partnership wise to many business owners who have been screwed over tremendously by landlords in the past. And it seems like you are running your business different than many of the other large property management and building holding firms in the Midwest. So how do people find you to try to get on that path of partnership versus adversarial relationships?
I think if you want to personally get to know who I am, you can follow me on Instagram at Tom McCrossin.
You are a real fuck. Instagram.
Jeez. Wow.
Hey, I don't know why I just tend to, I was on Facebook when I was younger. I still am on Facebook, but Instagram just seems to like be the most, real, raw. Hey, here's a picture of my dog one moment. And here's a picture of a project of construction tenant improvement that we're doing. Or here's a picture of a building we looked at.
Right.
And then the next place you can find and kind of follow what you know, the story of Tom McCrossin is LinkedIn. And I'm working to be a little more consistent on those posts on LinkedIn and sharing articles and sharing progress. And so getting I'm trying better. To be, I am getting better.
You're not trying, you're doing. There's a difference.
I am yep. doing. Thank you, Brad. And I think that's something else that, you know, when we think about those that are trying to build a business, we should give them 110% pat on the back, because that is such a hard thing to start. And anybody that is starting, it the only way you get better is to do, right?
Right.
And so if you're not doing and you're just critiquing, I think there's a quote that I've seen recently, and it said, those who are better than you will never downplay what you've done, right? Those that are doing better are only going to come and support you as you're trying to do better. It's those that aren't as great or aren't willing to put in the work that continue to critique in a negative way. So if you're doing a business and you're starting from scratch, congratulations.
And that's a great place to end this. And I appreciate you being part of your network and being available to promote the things that you have and you being a resource for some of my peeps as well. So thank you for your generosity of time as well.
I very much appreciate the opportunity to share what we're doing, how we're doing it, Brad. And very nice to meet you today, Steve.
Nice to meet you as well.
I love manufacturers. I love blue collar atmosphere. I mean, there's so many good people in this industry. It's fantastic.
So, yeah, thank you so much. And we will talk again soon, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.